Welcome, everyone. Here's what's been going on around Vero Beach in Indian River County this week.
It's good to be back. And, you know, as I was looking at the research for our deep dive today, a theme kind of jumped out at me. This week feels like it's all about hidden mechanics.
Hidden mechanics? What do you mean by that?
Well, we see the big headline, right? A brush fire, a big construction project. But when you really dig in, the real story is about these invisible systems that are always running underneath.
Okay, I see.
We've got the physics of drought, the engineering of sand bypass systems, and the legal machinery of state versus local government.
That's a great way to put it, because you're right. On the surface, we just see, you know, smoke near 41st Street or a dredge boat sitting in the inlet. But the why is so much more interesting.
Exactly. And we have a lot of ground to cover. We're going from some really urgent safety alerts all the way to a major baseball tradition coming back to town.
And we definitely want to get to the baseball. I mean, Yale coming to Dodger Town, that's a story. But we have to start with something much more immediate. This is really a stop what you're doing and listen moment for everyone in the area.
It is. We have an active missing person alert right now for a teenager here in Vero Beach. The Indian River County Sheriff's Office is really asking for the community's eyes and ears on this one.
We're talking about 17-year-old Shayla Vickery.
That's right. Her family reported her missing earlier this week. The critical timeline here is Monday night. She was last seen around 9 p.m. leaving her home.
And with these alerts, the where is just as important as the when. Authorities believe she might be in the central Vero Beach area.
Specifically, yeah, heading east near the intersection of 12th Street and 20th Avenue.
That's a pretty busy area, residential, some businesses. So if you live there, or if you were maybe driving through that corridor on Monday night, you really need to check your dash cams. Check your doorbell cameras.
Exactly. Every little bit helps.
So let's talk description. What should people be looking for?
Okay, Shaylee is described as 5'7", weighing about 140 pounds. She has black hair and blue eyes. But there is one detail in the report that really stands out visually.
The shirt.
Yeah, the shirt. She was last seen wearing a black t-shirt that features the artist Bob Ross.
The Happy Little Trees painter.
The very same. It's a very specific, you know, pop culture image. If you saw a teenager matching her description wearing a Bob Ross shirt and black shorts, that is a really strong lead.
So if someone thinks they've seen her, what's the protocol? They shouldn't just post it on social media, right?
No, please do not just post it online. You need to contact the authorities directly.
Yeah.
The number for the Indian River County Sheriff's Office is 772-978-6240.
Okay.
Or, if you want to remain anonymous, you can call Treasure Coast Crime Stoppers. But making that official call is the single most important thing you can do.
Absolutely. Keep your eyes open, everyone. Now, moving from individual safety to community safety, we had a really, really close call on February 15th over near 41st Street.
This is a story that perfectly illustrates those hidden mechanics of Florida weather I was talking about. We had a brush fire that grew to 4.3 acres.
Which, for a wildfire, might not sound huge to some people, but 4.3 acres in the middle of a residential neighborhood is massive.
It's absolutely terrifying. And we need to understand why this happened. We've had these cold snaps recently, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. My heater has definitely been on.
Well, see, in Florida, cold snaps are really deceptive. The cold air, it effectively freeze dries the vegetation. It just sucks the moisture right out of the brush. So even though it's not 100 degrees out, the fuel on the ground is just primed to explode.
So the grass is basically tinder.
Exactly. Okay. And that's what happened near 41st Street. The fire moved so fast, it got to within 20 feet of people's homes.
20 feet is nothing. That's the length of a driveway.
It's well within the range where radiant heat can crack windows. Melt siding. And this is where the story gets, well, a little bit like an action movie. Before the fire crews could fully get there and deploy, a resident named Wyatt Grawl and his friends stepped up.
They didn't run away from it.
They did not. They grabbed garden hoses. Now, you know, fighting a 4-acre fire with a garden hose sounds a little futile, but they were so smart about it.
What did they do?
They weren't trying to put out the whole fire. They were just wetting down the eaves of the houses and spraying the perimeter.
Ah, wetting the eaves. That stops the embers from catching on the roof, doesn't it?
Precisely. And fire officials later confirmed that this specific action bridged that critical gap until the heavy trucks could arrive. No homes were lost.
Wow. That is some serious composure under pressure. But we have to talk about the cause. This wasn't a lightning strike or something.
No. It was a resident burning yard debris.
During a drought.
During a drought. And more importantly, during a mandatory burn ban.
I feel like we need to bold and underline that point for everyone.
We really do. The expert analysis here is simple. Do not burn your trash. Do not burn your leaves right now. The conditions are just too volatile. As we saw, one spark didn't just stay in a pile. It threatened an entire neighborhood.
Just take it to the dump. It's not worth risking your neighbor's house.
Exactly. Now, speaking of risky behavior that endangers the public, let's talk about US-1.
This story makes me nervous just reading the stats. The sheriff's office arrested a so-called super speeder.
And super speeder isn't just a catchy nickname. It actually refers to how severe the offense is. We're talking about the 1100 block of US-1.
Where the speed limit is 35?
Speed limit 35. It's a commercial area, lots of cars turning in and out. At 2 in the morning, a deputy clocked a Mini Cooper doing 86 miles per hour.
86 and a 35.
That's 51 miles per hour over the speed limit.
I'm just trying to picture a Mini Cooper moving that fast on that specific stretch of road. It's hard to imagine.
It's basically a projectile. The arrest report says that the driver, a 20-year-old named Angel Mauricio Suarez Rivera, wasn't even going in a straight line. He was weaving, making improper lane changes to avoid hitting other cars.
So he was treating US-1 like a video game?
The problem is, the physics in the real world don't forgive. At 86 miles per hour, you are covering over 120 feet every single second.
Wow.
If a car pulls out of a driveway, you travel the length of a football field before your foot can even get to the brake pedal.
That is a very sobering way to put it. It's a miracle no one was seriously hurt.
It really is. And it's just a stark reminder that speed limits in these commercial zones, they aren't suggestions. They're calculated based on reaction times and traffic flow.
Let's shift gears from the roads to the water. We've got a major update on the Sebastian Inlet, and for once, it's not about another delay.
Finally, the dredging project is back on track.
Okay, so for listeners who maybe haven't been following this whole saga, can you give us the quick recap on why this was stalled for so long?
Oh, it was a complete comedy of errors last year. I mean, they had a fire on the dredge boat itself. They had the wrong pipes delivered. They literally had to fly mechanics in from California to fix the engines. It was just Murphy's Law in full effect.
But the machinery is running now. The sand is moving.
Yes. The contractor, ATL Diversified, is finally moving smoothly. They're doing what's called hydraulic dredging.
Explain that process. What are we actually seeing out there on the water?
So think of it as a huge underwater vacuum. Cutter head churns up the sand at the bottom of the inlet and in the navigation channel. It mixes that sand with water to create a slurry.
Like a wet concrete mix or something.
Exactly like that. Oh. Then they pump that slurry through these enormous pipes that run under the A1A bridge and discharge it onto the beaches south of the inlet.
Why pump it south? Why not just dig it out and, I don't know, dump it deep at sea?
Ah, now this is the deep dive part. An inlet is an artificial cut in the barrier island. Naturally, sand drifts south along our coast. When we cut the inlet, we interrupted that natural flow. The sand gets trapped in the inlet, and the beaches to the south get, well, they get starved.
So the beaches to the south erode because their natural food supply is cut off.
You got it. This dredging project is a mechanical bypass. It's taking the sand that should have drifted south and putting it there manually. They're moving 130,000 cubic yards of sand down toward the McLarty Treasure Museum.
That's a lot of sand. And I have to assume this isn't just about making the beach look pretty for tourists.
Oh, not at all. It's about economic survival.
Mm-hmm.
A recent study showed the Sebastian Inlet contributes $1.1 billion annually to this region.
Billion.
With a B. That's everything. Fishing, boating, tourism, property values. The inlet is the economic engine of the North County. So hitting this March 30th completion deadline is absolutely critical for everyone's wallet.
Just a quick heads up for people who are actually using the area.
For sure. If you're a boater, you need to watch out for the submerged pipes. If you're a beachgoer south of the inlet, give the bulldozers and the equipment plenty of space. It's an active construction zone.
Speaking of things that impact our wallets, let's head down south to Vero Beach City Hall. There's a debate heating up about property taxes that feels very different from the usual lower my taxes arguments we hear.
This is fascinating because it pits local reality against a state-level ideology. There's a proposal floating around the state legislature to just eliminate property taxes entirely.
Which I imagine to the average homeowner sounds like an absolute dream come true.
On paper, yes. Who wouldn't want that? But City Manager Monty Falls and Mayor John Cotugno are sounding the alarm. They're looking at the actual spreadsheet and saying, wait a minute here.
Right, because if you take away the tax money, how do you actually pay for the city?
Exactly. Property taxes make up $14 million of Vero Beach's general fund. That is 39% of the budget. To give you some scale, $14 million is roughly the entire cost of the police department.
But the state isn't going to let them just get rid of the police.
No, of course not. State law protects public safety budgets. So if that revenue vanishes, the cuts have to come from all the quality of life services. Mayor Cattigno specifically pointed to the lifeguard program, which costs about $1 million a year.
So no property tax could actually mean no lifeguards on our beaches.
Or, and this is the big trade-off, it means you start paying for things that used to be free. The mayor warned that to fill that budget hole, they might have to introduce paid parking everywhere, fees for boat ramps, and maybe even admission fees just to walk onto the beach.
That's the monetization of the city.
It completely changes the character of the place. You aren't paying a tax bill once a year. You're paying a fee every single time you want to leave your house and do something. It's a huge shift.
You know, governance really is the theme this week. Because up in Sebastian, they're dealing with a very similar tension between what the locals want and what the state is allowing.
Right, this is the whole Chester's Gap situation. Residents are upset about a proposal to turn commercial land on South Fleming Street into residential townhouses. They just feel the growth is happening too fast.
But the city council is basically saying their hands are tied.
They're pointing to Senate Bill 180. The city attorney actually called it a wrecking ball to local control.
What does that bill actually do?
Well, it was passed to speed up hurricane recovery, but the language is very, very broad. It prohibits local governments from being more restrictive than the state, and it bans moratoriums. So Sebastian can't just press pause and say, stop building for a year while we figure this out.
So they're forced to be reactive, not proactive.
Yes. If a developer comes in and ticks all the state-mandated boxes, the city legally has to say yes. But Councilman Ed Dodd has a strategy to try and get some of that control back.
This involves contracts, right?
It does. He's suggesting that instead of relying on zoning laws, which the state can just override, the city should get written commitments from developers before they approve an annexation or a rezoning.
A bit like what they did with the Graves Brothers property.
Exactly like that. Get the developer to sign a binding contract promising affordable housing or specific infrastructure upgrades first. Because once you give that zoning approval under state law, your leverage is gone. You can't go back and ask for favors.
It's a legal chess match.
It really is. It's the only way for a small city to try and maintain its standards in the face of state preemption.
All right, let's pivot from the business of government to the business of, well, dinner. We had a pretty surprising closure over at the Fort Pierce City Marina.
Grabby's Dockside.
Yeah, this was a big deal. On February 15th, they just shut the doors.
It was incredibly abrupt. And for anyone who knows that area, this is the spot where the original tiki bar stood for decades.
A legendary spot.
It was. Crabby's took it over after the tiki bar was demolished back in 2019. They built this beautiful new facility, opened in 2020, and now just silence.
The Facebook post was a little cryptic, wasn't it?
Very. They cited a decision not within our control.
That usually implies legal or financial issues, not just, you know, we didn't sell enough shrimp.
Well, the lease agreement there is pretty complex. The city isn't just a landlord collecting a flat rent. They actually get a percentage of the revenue. Alcohol, food, even the ice cream sales are all tracked.
So the city's probably reviewing the books right now.
They are reviewing the lease as we speak. But for the moment, the premier waterfront dining location in Fort Pierce is just empty. It's a huge gap in the marina's whole ecosystem.
We'll have to keep an eye on the city commission meetings for answers on that one. But hey, let's move to something that is undeniably positive. We talk a lot about problems, but our schools are absolutely crushing it.
They really are. The school district of Indian River County has maintained an A rating for 3 years in a row.
And I saw a ranking that put them right in the top tier statewide.
Top five. Out of 67 districts in the entire state of Florida, Indian River is number five.
That is just massive.
It's huge. And at a recent event with United Way, Superintendent Dr. David Moore explained how they're doing it. And it's not just about what happens inside the classroom.
This is the wraparound support concept.
Yes. Dr. Moore and Meredith Egan from the United Way, they talked about the fact that you simply cannot teach a child who is in crisis. If a student is hungry or has dental pain or has no one at home to help with homework, they can't possibly learn.
So the school system is partnering with nonprofits to fix those outside problems first.
Exactly. And the data proves it works. I mean, just look at Dodgertown Elementary.
That's a Title I school, right?
Yes. Historically serving lower income families.
Yeah.
This year, they saw 90% of their lowest performing students show actual learning growth.
90% growth in the toughest demographic.
It's almost unheard of. It just proves that when you support the whole child, the grades follow. By the way, there's a documentary called The Moonshot Story that details this whole literacy effort. It's definitely worth a watch if you want to feel good about the future here.
Speaking of Dodgertown, let's talk about the history behind that name. Baseball is back.
This is one of the best weeks of the year in Vero. The Andre Dawson Classic is taking over the Jackie Robinson Training Complex.
And this isn't just any old tournament.
No, this is an MLB-led tournament that specifically features historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs. You have teams like Florida A&M, Southern, Bethune-Cookman.
But there is a new face in the crowd this year.
Yale University. For the very first time, an Ivy League team is in the mix.
That is a really cool contrast. You have the swag style of baseball up against the Ivy League.
It's so great for the players to see those different cultures. And the man himself, Andre Dawson, is usually right there in the stands watching. A Hall of Famer. But the reason he supports this so heavily is that he was a walk-on at FAMU. He wasn't some superstar prospect.
Yeah.
He had to earn every single inch. So he loves coming back to encourage these kids who are in the same shoes he once was.
If people want to watch, do they need to go to the stadium?
You can definitely go in person. But if you can't, MLB.com is streaming the games. And on Saturday, the MLB Network is broadcasting two games nationally from Vero.
Which ones?
Yale versus Jackson State at 4 p.m. And then the big rivalry game, Bethune-Cookman versus Florida A&M at 8 p.m.
That is primetime exposure for Vero Beach. And while we're talking about athletes grinding to make it, we have a local update on E.J. White.
The former Vero Beach High School quarterback. He's up at Florida State University now.
And apparently he is making a name for himself already.
The reports coming out of FSU's Tour of Duty workouts, which are notoriously grueling, by the way, are calling him a freak.
In football, that is a very, very high compliment.
It is. They're praising his movement, his fluidity. He's transitioning back to wide receiver, and he's holding his own against these seasoned college vets. He's learning from guys like Deuce Robinson, but he doesn't look like a rookie out there.
I love seeing that pipeline from Vero to the big stage continue.
It really brings everything full circle. You know, whether it's E.J. White working on Tallahassee, or the teachers at Dodgertown Elementary, or Wyatt Grawl holding a garden hose to save his neighbor's house.
It's about showing up.
It is. It's a community that takes action. We have our challenges, you know, with growth and laws and weather. But at the end of the day, the people here are resilient.
That's all for today. Thanks for being with us, and see you next week.